Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up around 12:30 today, animal communicator and Reiki practitioner Tim Link joins us to share stories from his latest book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, joining the conversation to improve behavior and bond with your animals. But first, a compelling true story of tragedy and redemption that led to a Pulitzer Prize and a new movement across America. My guest is New York Times reporter Matt Richtel. He covers a range of issues, including the impact of technology on our lives. In 2010, he won the Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting for a series of articles that prompted widespread reform. He's the author of four novels and a narrative nonfiction book that we're talking about today, which is called A Deadly Wandering, A Mystery, A Landmark Investigation, and The Astonishing Science of Attention in the Digital Age. Matt Richtel, welcome.
Oh, hi, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
I was telling you before we started, and I meant it, what a great read this book is. I couldn't put it down. I know a couple of people blurbed the book and said they couldn't put it down, but it really is gripping. And the New York Times book review, of course, you do work for the New York Times.
But no money exchanged hands, I promise.
But the book reviewer said, this book should be required reading in schools next to Fast Food Nation and To Kill a Mockingbird. High praise, Mockingbird, I can't speak today. High praise indeed. So, Matt, this started as an article for you. You were looking into what your editor calls a smart, dumb question. Why are people using their phones while driving? Isn't that dangerous? Shouldn't they know better? And that story took off. Tell us how it all began for you.
Yeah, I mean, you captured it well. Here I was in Silicon Valley. I'm based in San Francisco, and I was noticing not only other people's behavior, but my own. Here I was doing something that intellectually I knew was not very safe, driving without my full attention, and I could not resist my phone. And then I started noticing that I was it was hard to resist my phone a lot of the time under all kinds of circumstances. Does that feeling resonate with you at all?
You know, I'm one of the very few people who can actually turn my phone off and not worry about it.
Okay, well, we got to study your brain.
It took practice because I was one of the very first people to have a BlackBerry, and I decided I was getting addicted to it, so I got rid of it years and years ago.
Yes, the proverbial crackberry.
Well,
it was. We thought what a great place to explore the human connection to the phone in the car, because if you could. If people have trouble putting it down in the car, what does that say about us and why, given that it's you're piloting a veritable missile? And to answer your question in a short way, we did this series of stories, and they did something that in journalism you kind of only dream about and you learn doesn't happen very often. They just exploded. The response was like nothing the high editors of the paper told me they'd never seen or had rarely seen. And people just wanted to know, what are we doing behind the wheel? What is this technology doing to us that we have so much trouble resisting it? And we discovered a core principle, and it goes like this. Everybody says talking and texting and using your phone behind the wheel is dangerous, and some 30 or 40% of people still do it. That is an incredible disconnect between behavior and stated opinion, attitude, and behavior. What was going on? And that's what fueled the articles and ultimately the book.
So let's talk about how the book came together, because you say it was fueled by these articles, which became a phenomenal success across America. And the story pivots around Reggie Shaw, this teenage driver. And right from the get-go, because of the excellence of the writing here, You're going to have a swollen head by the time you leave here.
But I know, this is awesome. I'm going to play this for my wife repeatedly. But I still think I'm going to have to take the garbage out.
You probably will. But the story drags you in right from the get-go, and you start to feel like you really get to know these real-life characters. So tell us how you came about Regishaw's story.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I mean, there was a driving principle there too, Vicky, and that is this. As a reader, I like stories, and I didn't think it was going to be interesting enough for me to write and certainly for an audience to read if I just said a bunch of science stuff. That would read like a white paper. I love stories. I wanted a narrative to be as compelling as any novel I could write, and there was one standing in front of me, a story I could not take my eyes off of. And it's the story of this young man named Regishaw. He was 19 on September 22, 2006. It was the last day of summer. Should I just tell you a bit about the moment in time that this story revolves around?
Yes, I think that's important, yes.
Okay, so here he is. He's in the northernmost county of Utah. And just to paint a picture of this guy, I don't know how he came across to you, Vicky, in the story, but to me, he was kind of the all-American kid, mm-hmm. and a good kind of all-American kid. You know, not like someone who put ambition ahead of their humanity, but you know, an A-minus student, a basketball player, but a decent kind of jock. And there, did he come across that way to you?
He did. I mean, his whole life dream was to go on this Mormon mission. So he obviously had some, you know, good intentions in him.
What a perfect metaphor. He wants to go on a Mormon mission, an LDS mission. And in fact, before our story starts, he had gone on one, but he had to come home in shame because he had previously had premarital sex and had to admit that on his mission, and he was sent home because he hadn't done the spiritual work. So here's a young man who is both a good guy and a little tainted and has a little trouble with the truth, and he's driving on the road this morning, this last day of summer, and even though it's the last day of summer, freezing rain is coming down, and he's going 55 miles an hour on this sort of mountainy pass, and behind him is a guy in a truck carrying 2 tons of horseshoes and horseshoe-making equipment. This is a missile at highway speeds, and he's noticing that Reggie is swerving across the yellow divider, and he says to himself, this guy's going to cause us all some trouble. And what winds up happening is the next time that Reggie crosses the yellow divider, he hits a Saturn carrying 2 family men, and they are just imploded by this truck with the horseshoes, and they die on impact. And 100 yards down the road, Reggie stops, and he's unhurt and unscathed, and he says he doesn't know what happened. And that's how our story starts.
Right. And, you know, it was a tragic story on so many levels because it impacted so many people's lives. You know, the guy who was carrying the blacksmith gear in his truck, I mean, he had no way out of that situation.
Yes.
And then the 2 rocket scientists who were killed, I mean, both brilliant men. One of them at least had been awarded a very high distinction from NASA. So, yeah. I mean, the impact was very great. How did you, you know, it must have been very difficult to talk to the families about this, to pull the story together. This happened in 2006, I believe. So when did you start documenting their stories?
I began speaking to people in 2009 when the series of stories ran for the New York Times. And I just sort of kept these conversations and relationships alive, both in my head and to some extent with the participants, because I suppose everyone listening right now knows their business well, and when you see the world through story, I just knew in my heart of hearts after decades as a journalist that something extraordinary was below the surface here. And when I went back to interview these people for the book, there was something I can only call a harmonic convergence, the outpouring of emotion and truth and revelation and tears and laughter. I would get off the phone, or at the end of the day, I'd say to my wife, I cannot believe they just explained that to me and told me that truth, from stories of abuse to stories of fear about Reggie, his fears, his family's fears, the prosecutor's fears. This was a seminal case, Vicki.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew what to do. We're in 2009 in a small town in Utah. There's really no laws on the books about texting and driving. This is a bit of a law and order county. It's also a county that really loves and cherishes the LDS culture. So here's a young man who's a big part of that. They are not sure what to do. This was a moment that crystallized not just that time, but in many ways, the time we're still living through. How do we think about attention? To who gets the blame? How much do we owe other people in our lives and ourselves when it comes to attention?
Right, right. And you said earlier that this is the biggest disconnect in society today, the gap between what we say we should do when we're driving and what we actually do. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that, because you say this, the answer to that is in this story. And you've included a lot of science in here, too, in a very readable format. So I want to just touch on that when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Matt Richtel, and we will be right back. His book is called A Deadly Wandering.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, it is said that on the morning of his only child's birth, the Buddha left his wife and son without saying goodbye. As he stepped forth to seek enlightenment, we'll hear the little-known story behind the Buddha's wife with Samuel Shem. And Dr. Karen Wyatt shares what really matters, seven lessons for living from the stories of the dying. We can, she says, discover what really matters in our own lives and begin to fulfill our potential and purpose now. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific on Alternative Talk 1150. Find past shows at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Matt Richtel. He is a New York Times reporter and a Pulitzer Prize winner for national reporting for a series of articles that prompted widespread reform, and we're talking a little about that today. We're also talking about his book, which is related, A Deadly Wandering, A Mystery, A Landmark Investigation, and The Astonishing Science of Attention in the Digital Age. And I want to get to some of that science of attention in just a moment, Matt. But first of all, I've heard you say that you know, following this incident, which you described in the first segment, the accident that was ultimately caused by Reggie Shaw texting, I've heard you say that there followed a gumshoe investigation. And if it wasn't for that state trooper, things could that came onto the scene, things could have been very different. It could have been written off just as a simple accident.
Yeah. One of the very interesting things here in this story, this remarkable metaphor, is that it took some very stubborn people to bring Reggie to justice. And they had to basically buck conventional wisdom. A state trooper who, you know, was every bit the TV stubborn cop, and a victim's advocate who said, we can't let this go. And they essentially pushed prosecutors to take on what was the first criminal texting and driving case, certainly in Utah, maybe in the country.
Right. So let's talk about some of the science that goes into this and what happens with our brain. We've done a couple of shows on this. I've talked with various marketing neuroscientists about, you know, how marketing impacts us, and it's not unlike this. But I love the analogy you give of a caveman in the wild tending his fire, and he gets a tap on the shoulder. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Yeah. So can I do that exercise with you right now, Vicky?
Yes, please do.
Okay. This is just to the listeners, I'd say I put a lot of thought into trying to, I mean, obviously, to trying to make this accessible. And I, over time, talking to scientists, I think I found a way that sort of characterizes this. So I want anybody who wants to participate, just imagine your forebears, you know, someone tending to a fire. So this is like you, but hairier. And then your forebear gets a tap on the shoulder from behind. So I'd ask you, Vicky, the rhetorical question. Could your forebear ignore the tap on the shoulder?
No way, because we'd have no clue.
No clue. Is it potential mate? Is it food? Is it someone saying lava run? Is it someone saying lion run? Is it someone with a spear? So analogously, when you're in the car driving, and you get a phone call, it's like a proverbial tap on the shoulder from anyone anywhere in the world. But the next step here is crucial. May I describe what's happening in the brain at that moment?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So the driving task, just like tending to a fire or building a fire, takes the part of your brain that is, and I'm oversimplifying, but not by a lot, that's right underneath where your forehead is, the prefrontal cortex, I'm sure your listeners have heard of this. It's, and just simplifying, it's the executive control center. It's involved in attention, focus, many of the most human activities. It's the most evolved part of the brain, separates us in many ways from animals. But when the tap on the shoulder comes, it sends a signal from, now you could just tap on the back of your neck. I mean, it's really above that, but it's much more reptilian centers, survival centers. They are critical. After all, if you heard a lion's roar and it didn't override your tending to the fire, you could be eaten.
Right, right.
You need that. And so your brain becomes hijacked for good reason. That's too pejorative a word, but co-opted by that signal from the back. Does that part so far make sense?
Yes, it does.
So that's just the first part of the... Just think about that as your phone rings. You're getting a tap on the shoulder from anyone anywhere in the world. Is it opportunity? Is it threat? But then add into it that information is probably social. And I know our time is tight, so I won't say too much about it, but social information is deeply salient. So now it's salient information, it's a tap on the shoulder, it's unknown, but there's one more terrific twist here, two more. Could I just add two pieces about that information?
Yes, please do.
And the neuroscience. Okay, I told Vicky on the break, to everybody who's listening, I don't mean to get long-winded. She can interrupt me at any time or hang up or, you know.
No,
really,
no, this is an important part of the story, I think.
It really is critical because it explains this disconnect. It also explains the popularity of phones. This goes well beyond the car. We're talking about the dinner table. When you're sitting in bed at night talking to your spouse or partner, I mean, these phones are powerful. One other thing about this information is it can send a dopamine squirt. It can send a burst of neurochemicals when you interact with your device. And even when you send social information, you can get a squirt of dopamine. This is a neurochemical that's associated with the reward system, and the more you get accustomed to it, the more you can feel bored in its absence. That is a cycle that is, if not addictive, at least extremely habituating. So Reggie, on the phone, in the morning, having an innocuous text, in the dark, in the rain, is so drawn to his device that he can ignore the fact that he's going 55 miles an hour.
Right, right. Right, and what consequences, my gosh, it affected so many people. You share a lot of other stories in the book of tragedies or near tragedies, similar kind of situations. It's, what, roughly like 9 years, I think, since this accident that you write about. So where are we now with laws across the nation? Because I know we're not supposed to talk here in Washington on the phone, but I see it many times a day.
Washington passed the first law, incidentally, and Utah, led by you know, Reggie dug his head in the sand and said he didn't do it, and he had quite a redemption. And I'll leave that to the reader because it's quite a story. But it's kind of discouraging, actually, Vicky. There are laws in, I think, 48 states in the District of Columbia, but the latest data says to me that the behavior of texting and driving, just on that one, has gone up. Can you believe that with everything we've learned?
Mm-hmm. I can, actually, because as you point out, you know, everybody thinks it's everybody else. They think they're fine.
Right. So there's another... Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, there's another piece in this. It can be... One of the things I learned in this book is I was trying to figure out, why are we still doing this when we know it's so dangerous? We say it's so dangerous. One of the other things I learned, bits of science, is when you are juggling a lot of information, it can be hard to make good decisions. It actually implicates and impinges your decision-making, your control centers in the brain. And so what you wind up doing, if you're driving and focused on the road, it makes it a little harder to make the good decision about your phone. You may be more likely to pick it up than if you had made that decision before you started driving. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
And so that's why, to some extent, we're in a compromised position when we're behind the wheel, and the device itself puts us in a compromised position by beckoning to us all the time, having us juggle information. I want to be really clear. This is not a screed against technology. We are... Without technology, we're not doing this interview. I could never write a book. We could not, you know, FaceTime our friends and relatives. You know, go down the list of things that would be inhibited were it not for these tremendous innovations. It's just that I think we need to learn how to handle them ably so we get the most of them without having them get the most of us.
Exactly. We need to master it instead of it mastering us. One of the things, this story, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised, I guess, given all of the other stories in the book, but you talk in the book about a medical journal called Perfusion, focused on cardiopulmonary bypass surgery.
Oh, yeah.
And they conducted a survey that found 55% of technicians who were monitoring the bypass machine during surgery said they talked on their cell phones during that surgery.
I was tipped off after I started doing this by a doctor in Rhode Island who has subsequently is doing an academic version of this book to help with students. He thinks it's so important, and he told me about these terrible incidents where doctors were getting distracted, including was the one in the book about the surgeon paralyzing somebody while watching a movie?
I don't recall that.
I can't remember if I put it in there or not, but there was this tragic case of a guy getting paralyzed. The doctor had been watching what was the funny movie about the Virgin? There's nothing funny about this story, with Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. I know the one you mean. I don't know what it's called, though.
That one. He was watching that while he was doing surgery. That's the level of distraction that can make it into everyday places. Well, that's hardly an everyday place, but that's why I began this conversation by saying the car is both real and it is figurative, a metaphor. After all, if you can do this, if you can be so drawn to your phone that you will look down and be blinded on the highway, what does it say for your everyday affairs?
Mm-hmm.
I've had my kids, I'm hyper aware of this, and I've still, well, they, my kids know I'm so super sensitive to these kinds of things, but my kids who are 5 and 7 will say something to me like, if I'm looking at my phone, you have kids, you know.
And at least they didn't text you that.
right. So I don't know if they're asking me to get off the phone or to buy them one.
Yeah, I actually had words a few weeks ago with a dad who had his kids on a Saturday morning down at the beach, and he was on his cell phone the whole time, and he told him to come play with me and my dog.
Oh.
So I got so mad, I went up, and I'm like, first of all, I'm not a babysitter, and second of all, you're supposed to be spending some quality time, I think, with your kids here. And so I walked away, but I see it all the time.
It could be fair for listeners to ask, well, how is that different from the books that our grandparents, you know, or newspapers buried their faces in? And there's a way, these are fair questions, and they're nuanced in some way.
Right.
The difference gets to be about the sort of the systemic nature of this, the interactive nature of it, and the ubiquitous nature of it. I mean, you practically can't go to Everest now without, you know, interacting in this way.
And that's right.
What's the cost? Well, maybe in some moments it's just a choice. Do you want to look at Everest or look at your phone? There's no objective truth to that. There is an objective truth, though, when you're driving down the road and you take the life of two rocket scientists or anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, very quickly, because we're almost at the end of our segment, but I understand Reggie Shore has become an extreme advocate for against texting and driving, and he gives talks around the country. A final thought you'd like to share with listeners? What do you hope they'll take away from this story?
My final thought is that Reggie, for everything we've said about him, is an incredible shepherd, if you will. I mean, he has served his mission through helping people to understand the risks here. And I implore people, if they want to feel moved, if they want to feel connected to this issue, read Reggie's Redemption. I can't read it without tearing up myself these many times over that I've read it and heard it. He really gives us a chance to think about the wilderness we're in and how to come out of it by telling ourselves the truth, as he ultimately wrenchingly did.
Well, Matt Richtel, excellent book. I can feel how excited you are about this, and I thank you for sharing this past 30 minutes with us. The book is called A Deadly Wondering, A Mystery, A Landmark Investigation, and the Astonishing Science of Attention in the Digital Age. And listeners can find out more about Matt and his work at mattrichtel.com. Thanks so much, Matt, for being with us.
Thank you, Vicky. It's an honor.
And please do stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be joined by Animal Communicator, and we're not going to text on that bit, but he's going to talk to them direct. And you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that... This just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Peggy Kaler at West Star Pacific Mortgage in Duval, we cover the world of animals. This week, July 12th, it's a Talk with Your Animal Sunday with gifted animal communicator, medium, and Reiki master, Darcy Pariso. Darcy can help you talk and learn about your animal friends or help you connect with animal or human loved ones on the other side. Plan to give us a call on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. It is said that on the morning of his only child's birth, the Buddha left his wife and son without saying goodbye. As he stepped forth to seek enlightenment, we'll hear the little-known story behind the Buddha's wife with Samuel Shem. And Dr. Karen Wyatt shares what really matters, seven lessons for living from the stories of the dying. We can, she says, discover what really matters in our own lives and begin to fulfill our potential and purpose now. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific on Alternative Talk 1150. Find past shows at conversationslive.net.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
I study every living creature's language so I can speak to all of them on sight. If friends say, can he talk in crab or pelican? You'll say like helica. And you'll be right. And if you just stop to think of it...
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And if you hadn't guessed, we are talking with the animals in this section. We're talking with animal communicator, at least, Tim Link. He's also a Reiki practitioner, nationally syndicated radio host. And he created his Wagging Tails consulting practice upon discovering his ability to talk to the animals. He often works with animal rescue organizations and is here today to talk to us about his new book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, Joining the Conversation to Improve Behavior and Bond with Your Animals. Tim Link, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me on board. I appreciate it very much.
Well, for listeners who don't remember the last time you were here, let's just give a little background here about how long you've been doing this kind of work. It's quite a while now, Tim, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been I've been doing it for over a decade now. Haven't aged a bit. It's amazing, but yeah, I worked as a telecom executive for 20 years and traveled the world selling advanced technologies for cellular phone systems. Big wording there. When this gift opened up, and so over the past decade, I left corporate America. Been doing this full time, helping people with their and institutions with their animals and. Help them better understand them, build relationships, and help them bond with the animals.
Well, the foreword of the book is written by Victoria Stilwell, and I love the work that she does on Animal Planet's It's Me or the Dog. I like the philosophy and the approach that she takes. And she writes in the foreword of your book, even though I'm still pretty useless at it, I'm open-minded enough to know that there is more to an animal's sixth sense than just a name, and that if we take the time, maybe we can tap into something deeper within ourselves to develop a skill we never believed we had. Do you think everybody can tap into that skill and talk with their animals?
Well, I think we can. I think we all can do that. I think that at a very early age, we did this naturally. You know, when we were children, we never sort of closed ourselves up to the idea where we couldn't do it. You know, everything was all new and open for us, so it wasn't uncommon for us to have conversations, even nonverbal conversations with animals in our lives and with people in our lives. You know, we hear a mother's instinct, and a mother has that deep bond and connection with her child and seems to know everything the child is thinking or wanting or saying without even words being transmitted as we do today. So I think we have to get back in that space and time. We have to quiet our minds. You know, get rid of the post-it notes on the brain, as I call it. Get
right.
rid of all those. And open your heart to it. Open your heart and connect with them. Spend the time and connect with them at a deep level, not only to share information you're wanting to share to them, but also receiving information back so you can connect with them and understand what their wants and needs are a little bit that better.
Right. So I think anybody who lives with a furry friend gets to know their own language. And they're also different. If you have three dogs, you've got three different ways of communicate, or they'll communicate in three different ways to you. But so how do we begin to, we go back to the basics and we kind of be open-minded about this and learn to open up to this. But give us some of the pointers about how we can really start connecting with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the book, Talking with Dogs and Cats, I talk about a sort of a three-part process of how to communicate with the animals more effectively. And that involves verbal communication, saying the words out loud, and having conversations with them. It also involves strong visualization, sending out a very purposeful picture, visualization of what we're trying to explain to them. And in return, say it in a positive manner. Get our energy up to that positive energy space. So I'm a firm believer that the animals understand everything that we're saying. Not only the great training words and techniques and key words that we use, like set, stay, you know, lay, leave it, these type of things, which are very important from a training aspect, but full conversation. So when we start talking about that vacation we're going to be taking, they understand it, and they think it is today. And so they want to pack up their little doggy bones and a little kitty catnip, and they're ready to go if we're not explaining it to them.
Right.
So they understand the words that we're saying, but every time we say a word or a series of words, we're projecting a mental picture of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more cognizant we are of that mental picture that we're sending out, the better they understand that. And in turn, when we talk about things out loud and we send a strong mental picture out to the animals, we feel better. Our energy goes up naturally to a positive level, up to a positive energy level. And we all know that animals respond better to positive energy.
Yes, yes. They very definitely pick up on how we're feeling and how we feel about situations and other people, I think, too. Do you think that, you know, we've all heard, oh, my dog doesn't like that person. Do you think they're picking up on us and our reaction to that person, or is it a feeling that they're having themselves, an intuition they have themselves?
Well, I think it could be a little of both. And the reason I'll state that is, obviously, we have a heart connection with the animals in our lives. There's a purpose for them to come into our lives, and they're here every single day to try to fulfill that purpose, whatever that may be, whether it's to be teachers, healers, you know, give us love, compassion, help us through situations. So they're very in tune with our energy. So if our energy is off, if we don't like a person or we feel negative about a situation, they're definitely going to pick up on that, and that can definitely have an impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
But in turn, they're very intuitive. So they trust their instincts. And their energy of a different person or a different animal they encounter may not agree with them. The people may be perfectly fine. They may get along with everybody and never seen an animal that they didn't like. But it's just that energy connection is not quite there.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing we go through. We meet people in our life, whether it's at work or out in public or whatever it may be. As much as we try to like them, you know, we can only spend a little bit of time with them.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much we can... Yeah, it's usually our in-laws, but no, just kidding.
You're going to be in trouble, Mr. Tim.
I know, please. I hope they're not listening right now. I'm just kidding.
So I have a question then. I recently, I just got back from vacation. When I left my dog, and this goes back to, I should just preface this with, you say, you know, talk to the dog. You've just discussed that. But you say, if you're going to leave the house, tell them, you know, where you're going and how long you're going to be. But I actually do that to my dog.
Perfect.
I tell him, you know, I'm 2 hours or whatever. I'll see you later. But we have this little routine. And so he knows I'm going to be gone and trusts I'm going to come back. And when I left him at the kennels, the boarding place this time, a different person took him from me and rushed him away from me. And I didn't have time to tell him I'll be back. And number one, he did not like that person. I could tell he was afraid of that person. And number two, my anxiety as I was driving back home got higher and higher because I thought, I don't feel good. I just don't feel good about leaving him. And I especially don't feel good that I didn't tell him I would be back because he was rushed away from me. So talk to us a little bit about what you think might be going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the chapters in the book, it deals with separation anxiety. I mean, it's a major thing that animals go through. And they may only have a mild case of it, and they can learn to adapt rather quickly, but over time it can have a negative impact on them. And some can't handle it at all. They get really some distress within their body. They have some dis-ease, whether it's a physical or a mental thing that they're going through. They have some sort of a challenge when we leave the house. So I'm always a big proponent of talking to the animals out loud and being very specific about how you explain things to them. So just like I mentioned with using the strong verbal skills and using the visualization and the positive energy, go specifically to how you explain things to them. So when you're going to leave them at the doggy daycare or at the you know, the vacation spa, as they
right,
call it,
right.
Yeah, you're getting ready to leave them. Well, make sure you do tell them where you're going. Be very specific about where you're going. Tell them when you'll be back. And give them the number of days or hours that are associated with that. visualize a clock moving forward to the number of hours in the day, or if it's several days on vacation, you see the check marks of the calendar going off. And then most importantly, give them a little job to do. Make it nice and easy on them. Tell them to just be sweet and brilliant, or take long naps for mommy while I'm gone, or play nice with the kids. Make it a very positive energy, low stress type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's going to do for you is they're going to understand that. They're going to see that, hear those words. They're going to see that visualization once again. You're going to feel better about it, and you're going to have less anxiety.
Right.
Because if you're leaving them and you're anxious about it, they're going to pick up on that anxiousness, and they're going to feel anxious and wonder, okay, why is she, when is she coming back? Is she coming back? Who is this person she's leaving me with? What do I need to do while she's gone? And it can be very stressful for him.
Yeah. Well, he was super glad to see me when I picked him up, but he did sulk for a couple of days, I have to tell you. So I want to have, before I get into the next question, let's take our break so I don't have to interrupt you. We are talking with Tim Link here, animal communicator and Reiki practitioner. His new book is called Talking with Dogs and Cats, Joining the Conversation to Improve Behavior and Bond with Your Animals. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we will be right back.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Oh, what a feeling. Oh, what a feeling for a dog.
Welcome back, everyone. We are talking with Tim Link right now. He's an animal communicator and Reiki practitioner. He's also the founder of Wagging Tails Consulting Practice. And his website is talkingwithdogsandcats.com. And I also have wagging-tails.com. Do they go to the same website, Tim?
Yeah, the talkingwithdogsandcats.com will tell you a little bit more about the book and my appearances and workshops that I'm doing. And then there's a link to the main site, which is wagging-tails.com. And that'll tell you a little bit more about the consulting practice and to give you a lot more information in how you can go about signing up for your own private consultation.
Okay, great. Well, I want to ask you a question. I just mentioned in the break that I'd like to ask you a question about my dog, because I adopted him when he was around two. I was his fourth owner. I've never understood how three other people could give him up, because he's just such a good, well-behaved dog. But he was, I'd like to see if you can tell me what his background was before. All I know is that he was rescued. The last guy who owned him had rescued him, and then he gave him up for adoption. But For a while when I got him, he seemed very depressed. And I remember my mother saying to me, well, he probably is depressed. He's probably wondering when you're going to give him up. So sit down and have a chat with him and tell him you're not giving him up. He's a lifer. So what's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I love your mom. So kudos to her. Always listen to mom.
Right.
She knows what she's talking about. But that's very spot on, you know, in the fact that his past, first of all, there was a lot of changes going on. And the female energy was definitely a stronger bond and a stronger connection. So there, you have that dynamic as well. So he'll get along better with females, perhaps, than he will male. But it also will blend with whatever energy you're projecting out there as well. So the understanding of being in multiple places over a short period of time does get very confusing to them, and it can lead to some emotional challenges because they don't know if they're going to be staying. So once they find their right and perfect forever home, your mom was spot on with saying, have a conversation with them, let them know that this is your right and perfect forever home, and I'm so glad you found me. I need you to show your brilliance, show them your bright light, serve your purpose for being with me, and let's have a great life together.
Mm.
So we're explaining those things. And one of the things I always encourage people also is, I do a lot of work with rescue organizations. I'll typically do workshops or do individual consultations at rescue fairs, where I'll do consultations and give back the money to the rescues to help them out. So I'm a big proponent of that. I'm a former president of a local humane society. But the one thing that I see time and time again is when people introduce their dog that's been adopted, they'll typically say, this is my dog, and you know, I think he's had a tough life, and he's afraid of bags, so somebody must have scared him with a bag, and he's afraid of loud noises, so I think he's been scared with that. And I have a feeling, based on the limp that he has, that he's been, you know, damaged or had some trauma and stuff. And, oh, by the way, his name's Sam. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like introducing our, you know, our partner or our girlfriend or, you know, our best friend. It's like, yeah, she's
got
bad
all
hair,
their flaws.
She's had a bad life, you know, and her name's Susie. You know,
right.
No. Leave that baggage behind, because if we're worried about their past, guess what? They're going to start worrying about their past.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to leave that alone. We understand it. We pick all the little things out of it that we can help them overcome and show that they have their purpose with us and that they no longer need to worry about it. So I'm not worrying about it. You're not worrying about it. And then we never talk about it again.
Mm.
Yeah, there's no way you can live in the present moment and fulfill your purpose for being here if you're stuck in the past.
Right.
And that's humans and animals alike.
Right. I think my dog's purpose is just to bring joy. He is such a joyful creature. I just had an email come in from a listener who said, do dogs really have a concept of time? And I guess she's referring to what we were talking about earlier when we said, you know, I'll tell them I'll be back in an hour or 2 hours. I would definitely argue yes, because I remember we had three spaniels who would wait. You know, when the clock came around to 4:30, they'd all go wait for my mom to arrive home.
Exactly. They know that. They know what time it is. And yes, they'll be thrown off by daylight savings time. So it takes them a little, you know, a few days to catch
up,
just like the rest of us. But yeah, I've had dogs where we've had, we used to do the Kong treat with our schnauzers, that the schnauzer team that we had, Buzz and Woody, that had passed on. And so we'd get the little round rubber Kong ball, the red ball, and we put little treats in there. And that was always at 11 o'clock every single day. On the spot, every single day, they would come up and put their paws on our legs, my wife and our legs, to let us know. And we could be knee-deep into, you know, working on the computer, answering emails, on the phone, whatever it may be, and we would know. Sure enough, we'd look at that clock, and it was 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Also solved many problems. In this book, I talk about it, Talking with Dogs and Cats, as well as my previous book, Wagging Tails. I give stories about how animals had some behavior challenges because the routine had been changed. The hours that their human companion came home from work had adjusted, and it was never explained to them. Once it was explained to them and told when they would be home and exactly what time they would be home, the animals solved the problem, didn't have the challenges anymore.
Right.
So it could be that easy for you. So, yes, let them know if you're going to be home at 6 o'clock, see that clock move forward to 6 o'clock, and don't be late.
Well, you share a lot of tips in the book about how to handle storms and fireworks, loud noises, riding in the car, excessive barking, all kinds of socialization of animals. What do you think is one of the, from your experience, one of the most difficult behavioral problems to overcome?
Well, it is based, you know, as you referenced this before, you've got three dogs and they all have their own unique personalities and their own ways of handling things. So you may have a dog that handles separation anxiety very well and one that can't handle it at all. One may be more stressed out if visitors are coming over to the house compared to the other. So you really need to get to know the personalities of the animals that you live with. From there, you know, there are some common things I get called on all the time. You know, the cat stopping using the litter box is probably the number one thing I get called on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a brilliant thing. Cats are, you know, what other creature can you put a plastic bin on the ground and throw some clay, you know, and they know exactly what to do with it.
Right, right.
But we tend to let them do their thing, and they tend to be a little bit more independent than our dogs are. Not, you know, we don't need to go out and take them for walks all the time, these type of things. So the best way to get our attention is to stop using that litter box. And so when that happens, we have to determine, okay, is this a physical thing that I need to take them to the veterinarian to get checked out, or is this an emotional or a mental thing that they're going through?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, if mental or emotional, what's changed? What has the energy changed in me, the lifestyle, the household? What changes have happened that may be triggering this?
Yeah. So I want to talk a little about Reiki and how that helps animals. I know it's become much more popular with certain vet clinics. I know it's something you practice. How are you finding that helps with animals?
Well, I use it in a lot of different manners. You know, the Reiki is a hands-off energy modality. So it's just like any other hands-on modality, like chiropractic or massage, these type of things, but you're using an energy connection to be able to smooth out the energy and get it to flow properly. So where it comes in handy for me is I can find out if there are some areas in the body where the chakras, the energy zones, are not lined up properly. And if there's one that is causing some challenges, then there could be some physical distress in that area, or it could be some emotional things that are going on. And so the Reiki will help smooth that out to get your energy flowing, or the energy flowing within the animal, since I use it for animals, get that energy flowing properly. So each one of our chakras, the seven chakras, are a center of our energy core. It's the same with animals as with humans. If there is one that's not vibrating at the right level or there's a blockage, then that leads to usually a physical or an emotional thing that's going on, and we need to identify that and see if we can get it cleared up.
Mm-hmm. So real quick, because we are almost at the end of our show, Tim, but I've often thought that or believed that a lot of that healing, like Reiki, comes from the fact that we also believe in it. But when you're dealing with animals, they don't really understand what we're doing. So you're telling us we do see significant differences with them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And since I'm a Reiki master, I'm able to do this from remote distances. So I do this, you know, I have clients around the world that I work with doing Reiki energy healing. And I wouldn't sell our animals so short. I think they not only understand more than we do,
mm-hmm.
I think they allow themselves to understand more than we do. So
right.
They don't put any preconceived ideas or notions out there that may block them from accepting what's going on within them and around them.
Okay, well, makes sense. The book is called Talking with Dogs and Cats, Joining the Conversation to Improve Behavior and Bond with Your Animals. A very quick 20-second thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Tim.
I want to get in there and have some conversations with your animals. Spend some dedicated time with them and really see if you can not only share with them verbally, visually, and in a positive manner what you're wanting from them, but in turn, quiet your mind down, open your heart up to hear what they have to tell you. And then once you receive that information, trust what you receive. And I think you'll be amazed at how deeper the connection, deeper the bond will be.
I love it. And the website is talkingwithdogsandcats.com. My guest again, Tim Link, the book Talking with Dogs and Cats, Joining the Conversation to Improve Behavior and Bond with Your Animals. Thanks so much for being with us, Tim. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. If you have any questions or comments on today's show, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. I also had a lot of questions last week if we'd be sharing the book list, and we will. I'm sending it for transcription today. We did a book list summer reading last week. We'll be sending that for transcription today, and it will be up and available. So you can just email me at info@conversationslive.net if you'd like to get that summer reading list that Pam Cady from University Bookstores shared with us last week. All right, you can also find us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.